Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There are a few people whose intelligence is brought to bear with greater effect, and I'm happy to say with greater frequency, than our first guest. He is David Goldman. You may know him better as Spengler, the pseudonym under which he writes for Asia Times Online. His writings appear there, of course, and elsewhere, including PJ Media and the Wall Street Journal and other outlets. He's the Wax Family Fellow at a wonderful organization, the Middle East Forum, and has a background in finance, among other things, as well as two books to his credit, How Civilizations Die and Why Islam is Dying Too. And it's not the end of the world. It's just the end of you. David Goldman, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's a delight to have you. Thank you so much for your time.
Frank Gaffney, it's a privilege to speak with you. Thank you very much.
Listen, there's so much to talk about, but I thought I'd start with a very important piece that you had at PJ Media recently, David, and that was something concerning the lack of common sense among many in the foreign policy community, notably the signers, some 50 of them, I believe, of a letter denouncing Donald Trump recently. You relayed a conversation with one of the more prominent of them, former CIA Director Michael Hayden. I ask you to recount that conversation and draw upon it for the larger point as to what we're up against, not just Trump, but I think all of us.
Well, Frank, I'd like to make clear that I think General Hayden is an excellent officer. He was a specialist in signals intelligence and went to National Security Agency. But I believe in foreign policy, he was very much out of his depth. Late last year, Gatestone Institute organized a lunch for General Hayden. I got there early. He got there early, so we chatted for a bit. And I asked why it was that John McCain and the Bush Group and the Weekly Standard, all the Republican foreign policy mainstream establishment, were so enthusiastic about the Muslim Brotherhood government in Egypt under Mohamed Morsi after the fall of Mubarak in 2011, engineered by the Obama administration and supported by the Republican establishment. We got pro-terrorist Islamic extremist government in Egypt, and they all seemed happy about it. And of course, the Muslim Brotherhood was overthrown by mass acclamation by more than 30 million Egyptians in the street, which brought back General al-Sisi, who's a moderate Muslim who wants to reform Islam and get rid of the terrorists. He's quite courageous about that. What General Hayden told me is, we were sorry that Morsi was overthrown because we wanted to see what would happen when the Muslim Brotherhood had to take responsibility for picking up the garbage. That's a point, by the way, which President Bush had made about Hezbollah when it won elections in Lebanon in 2006. He said, well, they're going to have to fix potholes, so implicitly they'll evolve into a Democratic Party just by virtue of the fact that we'll be in office. I was stunned. So General Hayden, the country of Egypt had exactly 3 weeks of wheat supplies left when Morsi was overthrown. They were about to starve, and Hayden said, all seriousness, I guess that experiment would have been tough on the ordinary Egyptian. And I know he didn't mean that humorously, because he restated that whole point about Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood picking up the garbage in his speech to the luncheon a few minutes later. And I think that exemplifies the ideological knee-jerk reaction of the Republican establishment that believes that the mere existence of democratic forms of government will automatically change the way people think. It's like a right-wing Marxism. Being determines consciousness. The new structures of democratic parliamentary forms will change people's consciousness and make the new man. And, of course, it's completely crazy.
Particularly when it comes to the likes of the Muslim Brotherhood and totalitarians, Islamic supremacists among them, but totalitarians more generally. And David Goldman, the thing that is so stunning about this is that, as you say, of course, there are lots on the Republican foreign policy firmament who have embraced this. Needless to say, the Democrats under President Obama did, without exception, I think, just about. When you see this lack of common sense on the one hand, and it rather vitriolically attacking Donald Trump, should we take away from that that Donald Trump is bringing at least more common sense to these foreign policy challenges and therefore being reviled for doing so?
Donald Trump is obviously not a foreign policy expert. He doesn't claim to be, but he's brought into his team and praised people whom I respect and think have a good perspective on things. For example, General Mike Flynn, former commander of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Trump's view, which has been stated a bit too simply, is that by trying to remake the Middle East into, you know, an imitation of Peoria, Illinois, we actually made things a lot worse. We created a permanent war. Things would have been better, Trump said, if we just stayed home and did nothing. So he understands that Islamic extremism is a threat, that you can't bring tens of thousands of so-called refugees into the United States without creating impossible dangers to American national security and the lives and property of Americans. So he's taken a very simple approach. Extreme vetting is an entirely sensible course. Wipe out ISIS. No more compromises with Islamic terrorism. Now, this may be a blunt instrument, but it's a common sense approach. I didn't support Trump in the primaries. I supported Ted Cruz. He wasn't my favorite candidate. I have some criticisms of Trump, but the common sense that pervades his approach to this is a breath of fresh air compared to the ideological knee-jerk reflexes of the Republican establishment.
Yeah, and this was much in display, I think, in the rather splendid speech overall that he gave on Monday about counterterrorism. We'll talk more about this, I'm sure, with you in the days ahead, David Goldman. But let me turn to a related issue. You've written about Turkey, of course, over the years, and have recently described it in the midst of this coup and what has flowed from it as this new, or once again, I guess maybe, the sick man of Europe. It's unfortunately the case, David, isn't it, that whatever it is that's ailing Turkey is very much contagious and now afflicting Europe and perhaps regions beyond as well. Would you talk a little bit about your sense of where Tayyip Erdogan's regime is headed and what it might mean for the rest of us?
Erdogan clearly is establishing an Islamist dictatorship. That's what Islamists do. Political Islam is incompatible with democracy. Any form of Islam is challenged to great democracy. We have not yet seen an Islamic country field a successful democracy. I'm not excluding it, but political Islam of the AKP party variety is incompatible. So Erdogan started by being elected democratically, and he handed out massive amounts of favors and construction projects and jobs and credit to buy the support of the populace. And he used that to establish a dictatorship. The coup was clearly an attempt to stop him from establishing such a dictatorship, and it failed. The Bush administration invited Erdogan before he was elected to come to Washington. He was hailed as the standard bearer for the new Islamist democracy. He was lionized by the whole Republican establishment. And even now, you know, I was on a Bloomberg TV interview with Gideon Rose, the editor of Foreign Affairs, the Council on Foreign Relations monthly, who said, Turkey is our ally. We still have to support him. Whatever Erdogan does, we're stuck with them. So we really helped foster this serpent in the Middle East. And there has been a massive amount of documentation. I don't think it's a controversial statement that Turkey has been the cockpit for supporting Islamic extremists, including ISIS, all throughout the region. So we've helped create a monster.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that monster, that serpent, if you will, is, I'm afraid, poised to bite us in perhaps very lethal ways. Watch this space, as I know you will so splendidly. David Goldman, a.k.a. Spengler, both at the Asia Times and, of course, in your various other outlets. We hope you'll make this one much more frequently of use. Thank you for all that you do, my friend. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, prize-winning journalist Bill Gertz takes us inside the ring. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country. The one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Jared Ogden, former Navy SEAL and member of Team Military on National Geographic Channel's Ultimate Survival Alaska. I want to tell you about an issue that you probably haven't heard much about. Thousands of America's veterans are suffering from occupational and environmental exposures that they were exposed to while serving in the military. We call these the toxic wounds of war. From Agent Orange and Gulf War illness to post-9/11 burn pit exposure and heavy metals in the air, and other toxic exposures that we don't fully understand. The Sergeant Sullivan Center is a powerful voice in our nation's capital, standing watch over these forgotten wounded. These men and women can't do it alone, and they need your help today. Every dollar raised by Sergeant Sullivan Center goes to medical research, public awareness, and advocacy. You can make a tax-deductible donation today at www.sergeantsullivancenter.org. That's SGTSullivanCenter.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. It is time for our weekly visit with one of the country's preeminent national security reporters, Bill Gertz, the prize-winning columnist at the Washington Times with his Inside the Ring column, and the senior editor of the Washington Free Beacon, the author of 6 best-selling books, and just an incredible font of information about what is developing in the world, and particularly among the threats to this country. And always welcome here, Bill Gertz. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Frank. Always good to be on the show.
So, it's been a while since we've talked, Bill, and I want to make sure that we catch up with you on developments with respect specifically to the Russians. We'll be talking in a bit with Mark Schneider about some of their nuclear programs, but I'd like to draw you out maybe on a story you broke about what they are apparently preparing to do to invade Ukraine again. Talk about that.
Yeah, the Pentagon has identified 8 separate staging areas where Russian military forces have been massing over the past several months. All of these locations are strategically placed to be able to quickly move on Ukraine. They're in located along the west, the eastern border of Ukraine. And when I contacted a U.S. European command spokesman about it, he said that the command was extremely concerned about heightened tensions, specifically over Crimea, where the Russians have been saber-rattling over what was reported to be a Ukrainian covert operation to somehow try and affect the infrastructure in Crimea. So what's happening now is that there are military exercises underway, fairly large scale, basically an amphibious practice to defend Crimea from a Ukrainian invasion, Crimea. So things are really heating up there. It's not clear whether this is actually saber-rattling or part of Russia's hybrid warfare, their information warfare, or whether there are actually going to be some action. But I can tell you my experience is that military command spokesmen do not use the word extremely very often. So that's kind of an indicator that that tensions are pretty high.
Bill, thank you for that. This is, of course, just one place where we're watching very ominous developments. Another is with respect to the increasing connection with and collaboration between the Russians and the Iranians. What are you picking up on that score?
That's right, Frank. This is a new area. The Russians have begun flying nuclear-capable bombers, Tu-22s, to conduct conventional missions against Syrian rebels from an Iranian base called Hamadan, which is about, I think it's like 250 miles west of Tehran. And this is a new development. According to the Pentagon officials I talked to, it does not provide them with a greater strategic or tactical advantage, but it's clearly a signal, a message, a strategic message from the Russians that the Iranians and the Russians are closely collaborating militarily now in supporting the Bashar al-Assad regime in Syria.
I wonder if you're picking up on it, reporting that the Russians are also beginning to be given the authority to use the Incirlik airbase by the Turks.
Not be surprised by that, although I have not heard that. Of course, that's where the U.S. airbase is, the center of the U.S. military operations in Syria is located. There have been signs of increasing cooperation between Moscow and the Ankara government in Turkey. So I would not be surprised if that happens in the future, but it would be unusual, especially because it would be co-located with U.S. forces.
Well, unless those forces are coming out, and there's some reporting again that they're bringing out some of the old tactical nuclear weapons that are there, and who knows, but it would be a very symbolic indication of what you were describing a moment ago, and that is the expanding Russian footprint in the Middle East, another of the real and ominous legacies of the Obama administration. Bill, one of the other things that you've discussed and that I don't think it's gotten nearly enough attention is the commitment that the Russians are making to a part of their nuclear force structure, if you will, that isn't quite as obvious to us as, say, their missile developments and bombers and weapons and so on that Mark Schneider will be talking about momentarily, namely a very substantial upgrade of and investment in underground command and control facilities. What can you tell us about that?
Now, this is a real ominous sign. U.S. intelligence has detected what I was told were dozens of new underground command facilities spread around in and out of Moscow. and that this is another sign that the Russians are preparing for a nuclear conflict, which is a very ominous sign. The problem is not just the fact that the Russians are modernizing their nuclear forces. They've also developed a new doctrine, which basically is called escalate to de-escalate. In other words, to quickly use nuclear weapons during a conventional conflict and as a way to bolster their weaker conventional forces. So this is creating real heartburn in the Pentagon and within NATO as well.
Hey, I just have to ask you about one other thing that you featured this week, and that is the breakthrough apparently the Chinese have made in a technology that perhaps in due course might actually give rise to a sort of Star Trek style teleportation capability. What's up with that?
Yeah, I mean, the Chinese this week launched something called a quantum communication satellite. And basically, it's the ability to conduct communications without the physical transfer of electrons. And I'm not too clear on all the physics involved, but it involves the use of subatomic particles. They were said to be ready to use this for communications, and then Xinhua, the official state-run Chinese news agency, said that future applications could include some type of physical deep teleportation of physical objects, as we saw in Star Trek. But I think the real concern right now is the fact that this communications could secure their ability to prevent the National Security Agency and other governments from finding out what's going on in China, which is represents a real threat, in my view, that we've got to get better intelligence on the Chinese. They're very secretive, and they're building up their forces in a way that we've got to learn about them. We know from the Edward Snowden documents that in the past, NSA has scored impressive gains against China, penetrating its intelligence and military communications for gaining valuable intelligence.
Yeah, that may be a thing of the past, though, as you say, Bill Gertz. Let me ask you finally, as we'll be talking about this with Mark in a moment. Bill, you've reported that Chairman Bob Corker, who runs the Senate Foreign Relations Committee these days, has expressed very strong opposition to an initiative of the Obama administration that I must say worries me greatly, too. Give us a flavor of what that's about.
Yeah, this is a significant story. And we've got, as usual, as we saw on the Iran hostage for $400 million exchange, the White House is lying again on this. Senator Corker is chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and penned a letter to Obama last Friday that said basically, do not attempt to codify into customary international law this comprehensive test ban treaty, which was rejected by the Senate in 1999 over issues related to its unverifiability as well as the possible need for nuclear testing in the future. Corker, in his letter, cites a State Department letter, which has not yet been released, in which it says that they're going to use language in a UN resolution that would have the effect of imposing a legal restriction on the United States. And the White House has not addressed that part of it, but they're denying that they're going to have any kind of legally binding UN resolution. So this is an unfolding story.
We'll be watching this space as we do yours every week. Bill Gertz, thank you so much for your time today and for, of course, the great work you do inside the ring and at the Washington Free Beacon. Come back to us again soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Rick Manning about developments in Congress that will determine perhaps the future of the Internet and our sovereignty. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. What a difference it makes when the media actually does what it's meant to in our constitutional republic. A free press is supposed to hold officials accountable. Tragically, that mostly hasn't happened during the Obama years. In recent days, however, the Wall Street Journal revealed that the Obama administration paid a $400 million ransom to the jihadist Iranian government for several American hostages. President Obama and his flacks insisted no such thing had happened. Well, yesterday, the Journal published the details of the carefully synchronized transaction that resulted in the release of the Americans as pallets of cash were turned over to the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, the mullah's terrorism arm. The State Department spokesman finally confirmed the obvious. Team Obama did pay ransom. It's bad enough that we've been repeatedly lied to. Worse yet, we are now all potential hostages. This is Frank Gaffney.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts. Now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Secure Freedom announces the launch of our newest initiative, the Counter Jihad Campaign at counterjihad.com. We have gathered some of the foremost experts and activists to begin our fight back against those who long ago declared war on us. You can see our first two ads asking those who see something bad happening, like the attack in Garland, Texas, or the dozen jihadists at the Boston Marathon Killers Mosque, to say something. Join us and be a part of the Counter Jihad.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. That's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. Now that the June 30th deadline for a nuclear agreement with Iran has passed, Secretary of State John Kerry is in Vienna struggling to finalize an agreement. Listeners to this program know that the nuclear talks are deeply flawed and a bad deal is preordained. We now know one reason for this bad deal is because the Rockefeller Foundation spent millions to back a loose coalition of peace groups, think tanks, and former U.S. officials to push for a nuclear agreement with Iran. This included freelance diplomacy with Iranian officials over the past 10 years. In addition, a core member of this effort is former CIA official Paul Pillar, who wrote a 2012 article titled, "We Can Live with a Nuclear Iran." This explains why a bad deal with Iran will emerge from the nuclear talks. This is another reason why Congress must kill this deal. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at our new website on the Iran Talks, irantruth.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by Rick Manning, the president of an absolutely indispensable organization, Americans for Limited Government. Rick is a man I've come to admire greatly for his public service in places like the Labor Department under the George W. Bush administration, as well as that in the private sector, notably with the National Rifle Association for many years. He is a columnist for The Hill and has written extensively for FoxNews.com and major other publications. Rick is a good friend as well, I'm happy to say, and a mentor on many of the most important issues of our day. So, Rick, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Frank. You're too kind.
Well, let's start with one of the issues that you've been teaching me about, and I think very, very helpfully engaged in elsewhere as well, and that is something called ICAN. I'm not sure that anybody knows what that stands for. I don't. But tell us what's at stake and what's happening with respect to it.
Well, what we're seeing right now is the Obama administration is trying to transition control over the Internet from the U.S. government to a private group called ICANN, which is currently the vendor which manages the operations for the Department of Commerce. Why this is significant is because the only operational oversight over how the Internet is run, over the naming conventions, over the capacity to censor words on the Internet, is the U.S. government's oversight and the First Amendment protections that provides. Absent that oversight, the First Amendment protections on the basic Internet functions go away, and you and I are vulnerable to the mob that is going after every kind of speech that they believe is is dangerous because it happens to be true.
Or offensive to Muslims, for example, or other, you know, sensibilities like the Chinese governments and so on. And again, Rick, the thing that's so incredible about this is that it seems to be going forward with scarcely any debate at all. Where is the Congress on this? What is being done to protect our First Amendment freedoms and an indispensable asset for commerce as well as security and other considerations, namely the Internet?
Obama tried to get legislation passed, which would have basically given them a rubber stamp to do it. He was not able to get that done. The House Judiciary Committee Chairman, along with the Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman, Goodlatte and Grassley, have sent a letter saying that there's extraordinary concerns about the legality of transferring this U.S. property over to a private entity. Sean Duffy's been pushing a defund. We've had a defund for moving forward with any activity for more than 2 years, yet they're going ahead and doing it anyway in direct violation of Article 1. This is going to turn out to be one of Paul Ryan's biggest tests, because if he's not willing to stand up for the power of the purse, where the Congress said, you can't do this, and the administration did it anyway, if he's not willing to stand up for the basic power of the purse, he has no legitimacy as Speaker.
I want to also call out in this regard John Culberson, the chairman of the Appropriations Subcommittee that oversees the Commerce Department, for his efforts to actually exercise the power of the purse. And
Frank, you're 100% correct.
Important test.
John Culberson has been a true hero here. In fact, he is probably going to be the biggest reason why Speaker Ryan is going to have to take action. Because when the appropriators are saying, our job is we don't have a job anymore if you're not going to enforce the power of the purse, that puts Ryan right on the spot. So John Culberson is going to be a name for your listeners to listen for, because he's going to be the key player who's going to make this thing happen, who's going to stop this from happening.
Let us pray he does, because it's there's a lot on the line here. Rick, another issue that you've been very directly, well, I think instrumental in elevating as a public policy issue, as it should be, of course, is this Trans-Pacific Partnership. As a result, in part of your efforts, for sure, the presidential candidates, both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, have expressed their opposition to this deal. And yet, as with the ICANN story, it seems as though Obama may yet get his way, perhaps in a lame duck session in which this thing would be rubber stamped by the Congress. Again, tell us what's at stake with this so-called TPP and what your current reading is on what's likely to happen.
Well, Frank, I think what's at stake is we potentially, as a nation, lose our basic sovereignty. Trans-Pacific Partnership covers almost all of our nation's economy, everything but the service sector. And what we would be doing is transferring regulatory and legal powers over to an international body that could, in fact, overturn any law or regulation that the U.S. Congress chose to either write or to rescind. And as a result, you effectively, with the TPP, are putting the very essence of the consent of the governed at risk and turning it over to an unelected body that consists of people like the Sultan of Brunei.
You know, that is the point that I feel very strongly, again, in part thanks to what I've learned about all this from you, Rick Manning. And are you expecting that Paul Ryan, who is a supporter of it, and Barack Obama, who needless to say sees it as part of his legacy, will nonetheless, irrespective of the outcome of the election, try to jam this thing through come November?
President Obama is going to try to jam it through. The way we beat it after lame duck is by having members of Congress contacted by their constituents right now and being told with no uncertain terms, no TPP in the lame duck, them to commit to no TPP in the lame duck, because here's why they want to do it after the election. It's not just avoiding the voters, but a large number of the people who will be voting on it will be people who have already left, who are no longer in office, have been voted out, or they chose not to run again. All those people are looking for new jobs, and the people that they'll be looking new jobs from are the exact supporters of TPP. So we have to get these people really in the crosshairs now, we have to say, force them to commit to no TPP in the lame duck and beat this thing right now, because if we're stuck after the election and we're fighting it and we don't have the commitments up front, we're going to lose.
Amen. Rick, we appreciate your leadership at Americans for Limited Government in this regard, and we look forward to working with you on it. Lastly, Rick, very quickly, one of the other places in which Barack Obama's legacy may exhibit a diminishment of the sovereignty, particularly of the states and local communities, for that matter, is in an effort that is increasingly obvious of trying to nationalize our police forces. Donald Trump had a very powerful speech on law and order earlier this week. Talk about both, if you would, quickly.
Sure. Mr. Trump's speech on law and order hit the exact mark in terms of both what Americans want to hear about making certain that their neighborhoods are safe, but also he spoke directly to the Black community, and that had a real impact because, you know, contrary to popular wisdom, people in the Black community don't like their neighborhoods burned down by a bunch of thugs. They want the same safety and security and good education and opportunities that everybody else does that's been denied them by the Hillary Clintons of the world. And Donald Trump made that case directly to them in a very powerful way in Milwaukee. And the results are there. It shows the latest poll show Trump up about 10% amongst Black voters, which is a huge gain, and would be, if that holds, it would make it extraordinarily difficult for Hillary Clinton to win the presidency. In terms of the international issue, the UN Human Rights Commission was invited by our Department of Justice to do a tour of Ferguson and Baltimore and other places and set up to meet with the Black Lives Matter people, the ACLU and others, to effectively do a report that condemns the U.S. law enforcement system, that condemns our way of justice, and in fact urges that the federal government nationalize the policing in all 18,000 local jurisdictions where policing occurs. They also wrote in their report that the U.S., while it has a multitude of laws, should be subsumed, all those laws should be subsumed to international law. UN Human Rights Commission consists of people like China, Saudi Arabia, Cuba, Venezuela. These are the people who are telling us that our laws are not good enough from a human rights perspective. And that's what Barack Obama's vision is for this country.
Yeah, it's outrageous. It must be repudiated in all of these particulars. Rick Manning, again, your leadership on these and related issues are incredibly appreciated. Keep it up. Come back to us again, if you would, very soon. In the meantime, we will be talking next with Mark Schneider about what Barack Obama is doing to dismantle our nuclear deterrent. That and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It's been over 7 years since a church group from another state brought a couple hundred refugees to the rural county where I live. I wanted to know, how could they do this? What was the governmental process that allowed the resettlement of refugees to a county ill-prepared to assimilate them? Employment opportunities were scarce. The health department was not familiar with illnesses and mental health problems of people who came from parts of the third world. The school system was not prepared to teach large numbers of students who didn't speak English.
That's author Ann Corcoran discussing her new book, Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement and the Hijra to America. She explains how Muslim immigrants are being quietly resettled into American towns without vetting them, even for terrorist links. Corcoran also explains how the global jihad movement is using immigration as a stealth campaign to spread its influence in America. You can read Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement, and the Hijra to America on securefreedom.org or purchase a copy on amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
I'm Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. One of President Obama's worst foreign policy failings is the lack of a strategy to defeat Al-Qaeda and ISIS. These terrorist groups are part of a global movement to establish Islamic supremacy and Sharia through violence. This movement is called the Global Jihad Movement. It will not be defeated without a strategy that recognizes its true nature. In January 2015, we issued a comprehensive strategy to defeat the Global Jihad Movement. It is called the Secure Freedom Strategy and is based on National Security Directive 75, the strategy that President Ronald Reagan used to defeat the global totalitarian threat of his time, the Soviet Union. Like President Reagan's strategy, we lay out a comprehensive plan on how the United States government can be reorganized and focused to understand and defeat the global jihad movement. You can read the Secure Freedom Strategy at securefreedom.org, or you can purchase a copy on Amazon.com. I'm Fred Fleitz.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined by Dr. Mark Schneider, one of the country's preeminent authorities on matters involving nuclear forces and deterrence and arms control. A man I've come to know and admire greatly for his work. Some of it I had a chance to participate in at the Defense Department in various senior capacities. He's also a former foreign service officer. And today is a senior analyst with the highly respected National Institute for Public Policy. He is an author of numerous tracts and articles and reports. And as I say, just one of those guys whose corporate memory about what's at stake with respect to our nuclear deterrent is essentially without parallel. Mark Schneider, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much for the very kind introduction.
I want to ask you, first and foremost, Mark, about a gambit. I think that's the technical term for it, that the Obama administration is engaged in at the moment in the United Nations. And we'll talk more in a moment about what the Russians and the Chinese and so on are up to that's very alarming and that really argues for us having the most effective nuclear deterrent we possibly can. But what is the administration trying to do at the UN, and how does that relate to our constitutional treaty-making mechanisms?
Well, as Senator Corker has pointed out, they're basically trying to evade the constitutional requirement for advice and consent on treaties. There is no possibility of getting the CTB ratified because the flaws in it are monumental.
Now, again, this is the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty.
Yes, Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, which completely bans, without precisely defining what's banned, nuclear testing. Now, the United States Senate in the late 1990s voted down the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty by a majority vote. That was completely unprecedented until, I guess, the so-called Iran deal.
And Mark Snyder, you said something very important, and I want our listeners to understand exactly what it means. The Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, which the President of the United States is trying essentially to get the UN to make binding upon us, even though he can't get it through the United States Senate, does not define the activity that it is banning. How on earth could that be, and what does that mean in terms of its implementation?
Well, it didn't define precisely what a nuclear test was. The U.S. position was that it's zero, absolute zero, no energy released by a nuclear chain reaction or so-called supercriticality when you initiate a small quantity of uranium or plutonium. So you have a situation where there's a substantial evidence on the part for Russia actually conducting very low-yield nuclear tests since literally 1994 for the earliest Russian press reports, and also China probably conducting low-yield nuclear tests. Now, these can be very useful in weapons development. And there is also a very serious verification problem because it's easy to conduct nuclear tests if you don't conduct them off known nuclear test ranges. And for these tests not to be detected. The notional detection threshold for the CTB is 1,000 tons of TNT. The United States or Russia could conduct nuclear tests below that threshold and have very large weapons implications.
So let me make sure that we can translate this for the layperson. The treaty bans nuclear testing, but doesn't specify whether any yield can be generated or not. It appears that the Russians have taken advantage of that opportunity to test at least in ways that can't be detected. And what you've indicated, Mark Snyder, is that this can be of very real value to them as they modernize their nuclear forces, they and the Chinese too, presumably. So talk for a moment, if you would, quickly, Mark, about what we're seeing in terms of the modernization of the Russian and, for that matter, the Chinese nuclear arsenals, presumably with the benefit of such testing of their nuclear warheads.
Well, both of them have a very comprehensive modernization program for delivery systems underway. In the case of the Russians, there are over 20 announced modernization programs that are either being deployed today, and that's about half of them, or are under development for deployment in 5, 7, 8 years. We have two that are under contract, and neither of them will be operational until the late 2020s or the early 2030s. This is an enormous disparity about what is going on. Chinese have very similar Thai programs underway. They are both deploying new strategic missile systems and they're developing still newer and more capable strategic missile systems. Both of them are testing hypersonic boost glide vehicles. Both of them, the evidence is from open sources is very strong. They are both developing new types of nuclear weapons. In the case of the Russians, everything from precision, low yield, low collateral damage to the most destructive nuclear weapon ever built.
In your professional judgment, Mark, and I, as I've said, I regard it as among the most competent of anybody in America with respect to these sorts of issues, are we putting the very credibility of our nuclear deterrent in jeopardy by persisting in this practice of, to say nothing of putting ourselves in a position where we would never be allowed to test again if the Obama administration has its way at the UN?
Yes. I mean, we are being put at financial risk, and that's particularly true if both Russia and China are engaging in low-yield nuclear testing, which I think they both are. That gives them an enormous financial advantage. They don't have to do some of the sort of screwball things that we do to try to come up with some alternative to testing.
Computer simulation and so on.
Well, more than that. The cost today of a typical nuclear weapon life extension program is now $10 billion. If we could test, it would be a small fraction of that. And even if you had more more serious objectives, like actually improving the weapons, which we're not, you would still be able to do this at substantially less cost. The risk associated with a so-called stockpile stewardship is that you will never know for sure whether these life-extended weapons are actually functional. I think it's highly probable that they will be, but you will never be sure of that. And the Russians, because they can test, will have much higher probability of success.
And confidence that theirs will do the job that they're required to do, whether ours don't or not. Mark, we have to leave it at that for the moment, I'm afraid. Thank you so much for the work you do at the National Institute for Public Policy, and I hope you will come back to us again very soon. The rest of you, I hope, will come back to us on Monday. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.